And welcome back to the program. It's your extended news at noon. Tracy Morgan, of course, with you. All right, so we're going to spend the next many minutes with Dr. John Love. And of course, we've checked in with him for the past, well, it's been what, two and a half years, it feels like, infectious disease specialist with the Butler Health System. And we are going to talk about COVID, but we're going to talk about what does it look like? What does it mean to go from a pandemic to an endemic? And so, Dr. Love, as always, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure, Tracy. Thanks for having me.
So first of all, can we say, has anybody officially declared that COVID is actually moving from a pandemic to an endemic, or is that society kind of deciding that?
No one in the public health realm has really kind of made that transition. I think in part because there's so many parts of the world that are still dealing with this as an active pandemic with high hospitalization rates, high death rates. We still remain under the threat of another variant spinning out of some other part of the world and threatening our kind of moment of calm that we're enjoying right at the moment. I should say relative calm. So I don't know that anyone's really kind of gotten to rounding that corner. You know, I think, frankly, I think a lot of the conversation around this come from more cultural and societal fatigue, because once something, you know, is just going to be endemic and here, then we should just stop worrying about it as something special. You know, we should stop precautions. We should stop talking about it. It's just part of the way of life now. And that's, I think, the goal for a lot of people. And so I think that conversation is kind of serving a different need in, you know, a lot of people's minds. It's not that it's not an appropriate conversation. I think most epidemiologists and infectious disease folks and others are going to say, listen, you know, COVID's not going anywhere. We're likely to continue to see the kind of pattern we're seeing right now, which is, you know, we still have cases in the community. We still have people being admitted to the hospital. We still have people actively sick from this. We still have people who need treatment for this, just not in the numbers that we had seen 3-4 weeks ago.
Then when does a pandemic go to an endemic stage? How is that defined?
The definition there is a little blurry to me. You know, I've never lived through something going from a pandemic to being endemic before, at least not as a healthcare provider. What we'll see is basically basal levels of illness in the community, kind of like we see with flu, with a kind of a, it may or may not be seasonal. Influenza is seasonal. RSV has a seasonal pattern to it, which is another kind of endemic respiratory viral infection. And if you think about other endemic infections in other parts of the world, they may not be seasonal, but they may have just low-level activity that is just expected. It's not a surprise. It's uncommon, potentially, but it's not a surprise. And that's kind of where, you know, an endemic falls into. I still feel like COVID has a potential for a lot of surprises yet. And I think we're still learning a lot about what to expect. And, you know, I think until we have, you know, if we don't have any more spikes, we don't have anything more like that, I think we're going to look at this point in time retrospectively and say this is kind of when we moved into being an endemic illness. If 2 months from now we have, God forbid, another Omicron-like surge with a new variant out of nowhere, then obviously this was not the point we became endemic. So I think it's going to be a little retrospective when we decided that it finally is. I don't think it's going to be a, you know, we made it, mission accomplished, you know, landing on a aircraft carrier kind of event.
Do you think that society is I think society has been wanting to move on, but do you think that their minds are easing because we hear of, like, the reports from the government, you can go get tested, and then if you're sick, you can just get the pill right there. And when I hear that, I think of the many conversations I've had with you, and I think, but isn't there a time factor that you get that pill? Like, is that pill even effective? You know, there's so many questions that I had about that when I heard that. But when society hears that, without them diving into the research that you know so well, isn't there a disconnect with information?
I think a portion of the population has been done with COVID for over a year. I think except when it would rear its ugly head and affect them or directly affect one of their loved ones. You know, another portion has been much more engaged with and active with public health recommendations. And this period we're in now, I mean, the case rates are really very low. It's not zero. We still have between 5% and 6% positivity of our PCR tests in Butler County. That's over the past week, and that's kind of been going down. And so that we're probably under that at this point. We did kind of a rolling average or an average today, but that compares to 30% plus a few weeks ago. You know, so we're just in a very different place, and it feels different, and that's okay. I think one of the problems with the messaging throughout the pandemic is that we knew this was going to change over time, and a message that was correct 3 weeks ago may not be the correct message now because what we know is different or the conditions are different. And again, that's okay. That's just part of the process here. So it wasn't wrong for us to say everyone should be wearing a mask 3 weeks ago and saying today, you know, you may not need to wear a mask, you know, especially if you're vaccinated. So I think there's a big change in realigning kind of everyone's thinking and making it a little more flexible. And I don't know what to expect. You know, again, we may look back and say this is the last time we had to go through that. In a month, I might be back talking to you saying, well, sorry, guys, got to dust off your masks and your respirators. And, you know, we're going back to, you know, DEFCON 1. Because something, you know, spun out of somewhere else.
Well, then let me ask you this, because of course I always want to ask you, what do we do? Can you give us the guidebook? And I know you don't have one. And so I know that's the hard thing about this, but there is an emotional transition that we have to go through. And again, we remind everyone, you are the infectious disease specialist. You're not a psychologist, psychiatrist, but you and I have talked about the emotional toll of this before. But now we seem to be in a different emotional space, because those people who are very comfortable with masks, or even like in my business, I don't even want to get a cold, let alone COVID, because it takes me out of my job. And there are plenty of people in that kind of position as well. If we are comfortable with wearing masks, now all of a sudden we have to get used to not wearing masks. And so it seems like another emotional switch. And then I think of those people who are still immunocompromised, and they feel comfortable wearing the masks because it helps them and protects them. If everyone loses the masks, then it feels like a scarlet letter, you know, that they're the ones who have the mask. And is there something wrong with them? And I don't know. It feels like a weird space to be yet again.
It's hard. And I can tell you just my perspective on this. I largely still wear a mask when I go into public spaces, like when I go grocery shopping. I don't necessarily do that because I'm at personal risk. I do it because I don't want anyone who's working in that space who may be at risk I want them to feel comfortable with me being in there with them. It is an effort to try to make things as safe as possible and as emotionally and psychologically as comfortable as possible for people who are still at risk despite their best efforts. You know, people who have a medical condition or on a medication that's weakening their immune system, people with, you know, significant underlying medical problems who, if they got COVID, you know, would have a real hard problem or hard time with it. I want them to feel as safe as possible. I don't necessarily pose a risk to them because I've been vaccinated. I've had it again recently. I'm the chances of my being contagious with COVID at the moment are just practically zero. And I know that wearing a mask doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me physically. It does not bother me emotionally. So I look at it and say, if it doesn't bother me and it might help someone else feel more comfortable, I am more than happy to do that. There are other people who don't have that same balance. They don't balance that equation in the same way. And that's on them. I can't make them feel any differently about other people. But it is hard. You know, I have stopped myself, you know, because I have gone and had lunch out at a restaurant for the first time in probably 2 years, indoors. It's hard. It's weird. It feels weird. But again, sitting there going, listen, the risk to me is just next to zero. My risk to someone else is next to zero. Now is the time to kind of enjoy this. I don't know what's coming, And frankly, I missed opportunities, say like last May, June, when things were kind of similar numbers as we have now. I missed the opportunity to kind of take a breather and do some of these things that I enjoy while I could before things got kind of hectic and the numbers got worse again.
Well, then can you talk to that person who is immunocompromised? Because there are plenty of people in your shoes that say, okay, yes, I feel the same way that Dr. Love does. And then there are going to be people who hear you and say, but yet I'm still immunocompromised. So what do you tell those individuals as a doctor? How does one manage this going forward?
Yeah, so, you know, the CDC's guidance on this with, you know, when they updated their masking, their community masking guidance, they kind of broke it down to community level spread and low, medium, and high. At low levels, which is where 90% of the country is, you know, they say, it, you know, kind of no one needs to really worry about masking. Only at medium levels, if you have, you know, some problems, should you think about this. I'll say for someone with a significant immunocompromising condition, I think out in a public space, regardless of this number or this metric that the CDC puts out, I would still be wearing something, you know, some kind of respiratory protection. I would still probably say if you're going to wear a mask, I would wear something more intensive than just a simple surgical face mask. I would use a KN95 or an N95 respirator just because they're going to offer you as much protection as you can. Being around unmasked people, if one of them is contagious, without a mask, they don't have any source control. So the viral exposure you're going to get from that person is higher than if they were wearing a mask. And so I want the person who's at risk and receiving those, you know, being exposed to that, to have the best protection possible for themselves, which would be, you know, kind of that higher level mask. Is that always necessary? No. And this is where different people's medical backgrounds or medical conditions are going to play into what their real risk is. And that's something each individual may need to discuss with their own provider to get a little more perspective on it. Some people are going to say, listen, the levels are low. I feel okay about this. I'm going to go without, and that's up to them. That is their decision. I just think that there are still some, there's still significant risk out there for some folks, and we need to, keep giving them and making tools available to them to keep themselves safe. But we also have to do the kind of emotional support for them, you know, recognizing that they're in a different boat than a lot of other folks.
Dr. Love, let me ask you about us generally speaking. How many times should we be running for a COVID test? Should we just let our colds just be assumed that they're colds? I know I had sniffles and was out of work the other day because I just didn't feel well. And someone said, did you get tested? I didn't know what to say because I thought, I don't know, do I get tested at this point? Do I not get tested at this point?
Yeah, it's really hard. I think, the availability of testing has improved. The home testing kits, I've seen them on the shelves again, which is reassuring. I would say, listen, if you have some symptoms you're not sure about, if you take a home test, that'd be great. If you're starting to have more flu-like symptoms, more fever, body aches, I would definitely get tested. That kind of, I'm a little congested. The problem is for people who are vaccinated, COVID can be just a little congested. But I don't want everyone getting, a PCR test every time. Not that there's any problem with that. It's just, that's a real burden on folks.
And we're in a different spot. We're in a different spot in this whole process than we were 2 years ago.
So, if you're saying the incidence in the community is so much lower now, which it is, what we call the pretest probability, the chances of this being COVID are just lower, just when you go to get tested, because there's not much in the community. It's like saying, you have a cough, you should be tested for tuberculosis. Well, our incidence of tuberculosis is next to zero. Sure, it's on the list of possibilities, but it's really unlikely. And so we don't test everyone for tuberculosis who comes into the hospital with pneumonia because it doesn't make sense. I don't think we're at that point where we can just ignore it as a possibility, but I think, if you are having the symptoms, I think that's a time to put a mask back on. As source control for other people you might be around, think about getting tested. Again, I would keep a stock of, one of these home tests at home so that you can do it if you ever get in a position where you're feeling just kind of questioning it. It's hard, again, as this becomes lower prevalence in the community when to tell people when to seek this out. It's just, I wish there were a sentinel symptom or something. Obviously, if you have like the loss of taste and smell, you should probably get tested because not a lot of other things cause that.
Let me go into one other area before I let you go today, if you don't mind. I know you and I've talked about long COVID before, where a lot of folks have been struggling with the symptoms long after COVID is gone. Are you still seeing that? And I'm wondering also about the recent brain reports that I've been seeing, like that there are some brain abnormalities or the change in gray matter within the brain. What have you been seeing now that we are this far into where we are?
You know, I think this is still just a really active area for uncertainty and for research. I think we have a lot of studies that are documenting, you know, there is this phenomenon. It's not that we don't believe that there's this phenomenon that happens in some subset of people who get COVID, because it's not certainly not every person that gets COVID, but some subset. And the symptoms are kind of variable. You know, there's the brain fog, there's fatigue, there's, you know, some people still have, you know, taste and smell loss. But there isn't a real strong, like, these are the three symptoms or three problems that come up. There also isn't like a lab test that will say, oh, your fatigue is because you have long COVID, as opposed to your fatigue is because you're hypothyroid, or your fatigue is because you're depressed, or your fatigue is because it's March and it's still freaking winter in, you know, Butler County, and no one, you know, is still, everyone's still suffering from just seasonal affective disorder. It's just really hard to put that, you know, to get a real clear diagnosis. It's a diagnosis almost of exclusion at that point. And so without having, you know, I think a lot of people are working on like what's a good working clinical definition so that we can identify these cases and study them appropriately. And then, you know, you have each research group is doing like their own little study thing, which is fine. But, you know, you have some research groups looking at, say, autoimmune antibodies. And you have some groups looking at brain MRI. And you have some groups looking at cardiac conduction or the electrical activity of the heart in various ways or other things, and saying, okay, that's great, but what's the unifying study here? Like, how are we putting all these data together to understand the pathophysiology so we understand who is at risk, why they're at risk? Are there ways we can prevent people from developing long COVID if they get COVID? Are there ways that we can help people get over their long COVID symptoms if they do develop it? We're so early on in understanding this, and our understanding of more chronic infectious or inflammatory syndromes is really very poor compared to understanding acute infectious syndromes. So this is something that's going to be really, there's a lot of money and a lot of study going into this. I hope we get a good answer. I think we will get good answers on the pathophysiology. I don't know that we're going to get good answers and we're ever going to get good therapies for this. I don't know that. I'm less optimistic on that front. And that's disappointing. I'm a naturally pessimistic person probably. So take that as, you know, with a grain of salt.
Sure. And how about vaccinations? Do you think that we're going to continue with a yearly vaccination, or again, is that too early to tell?
I think it's still too early. You know, I don't know that we're going to need, you know, yearly. I don't know that that's a sustainable model going forward. There are a number of vaccines that are still under development and under study. And so whether there will be a better, more long-lasting and more universal COVID vaccine than what we have currently, there's still a hope for that. I think we need to also better define what our goals are for vaccination. Early on, again, the messaging was, oh my gosh, these mRNA vaccines are 98% effective and that's terrific and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, they are really great in the short term in terms of preventing any kind of infection, you know, and over time, you know, that protection against having a mild illness really kind of wanes, but the protection against progressing to serious or life-threatening illness persists. And that's still a win. you know, because if people get an influenza like illness and they miss work, that stinks. But if they don't get sick enough to get in the hospital, don't get sick enough to die, the vaccine is still providing a really big benefit, not just to them, but also to the community, because it's keeping the hospitals from getting overwhelmed. And so I think we got to also talk about what is our goal for the vaccination. And I know everyone wants, everyone wants the vaccine to just prevent infection completely because they don't want to be inconvenienced by getting sick at all. And I would love that if that ends up being possible. I just don't think that's a practical goal.
Dr. John Love, infectious disease specialist with the Butler Health System. I know we have not been talking to you as much in the past many months, but that's how this rolls as well. We kind of roll along with the story. So I hate to say that we're putting a cap on this, and this is complete closure today, but I know you're in our back pocket to be able to call if something were to come up with COVID or if we see other variants. And I know we would be able to get to talk to you at that time if that were to happen. But I just want to say again, personally, thank you for all the conversation that you have given us over the past couple of years. Your voice is an important one in our community. So thank you so much for what you do, and thank you for being with us.
You know, I'm happy to help. Hopefully next time we talk, it'll be on some different issue. Unrelated to COVID.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you on that. All right. Dr. Love, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks, Tracy.